session number 26552,
Reel 2. Mr. Kinnear, Reel 2. We're talking about the air raids on Birkenhead, Poulton. And I believe you've got a story you want to tell us from that time.
Just along the road from Beach Farm, next to a field where we used to graze our horses, there's a big mansion there called Darley Dean. That's D-A-R-L-E-Y-D-E-N-E. And it was owned by a Mr. Chantrell, who was a shipping magnate. And he was a nice fellow, Mr. Chantrell. And the army commandeered his premises, and they billeted a platoon, I suppose it would be, or a company of soldiers there, and in nearby St. Luke's Church. Now, one night, Darley Deans was bombed, and soldiers were trapped, and the next wave of planes that came over dropped a load of incendiaries and set fire to the place. Now, soldiers were lying, getting burns alive kind of thing, and screaming. So the top of the hill by Breck Place, which I've referred to earlier, was a little shop, a little general shop, which was one of our customers, a man by the name of Mr. Brim. He could hear the screams and one thing or another, so he dived out, ran down the hill to Darley Deans, and was assisting getting the soldiers out, doing what they could. When he got back to his shop, he found it had been burgled, and his stock of cigarettes and what remained of chocolates, because it was the beginning of the war, early on in the war, they still had some chocolates and sweets, that was all stolen. And I saved him, and he was telling me, you know, and he said, I wouldn't mind, Les, but he said, what annoys me, he said, those fellas who robbed the shop, whoever it was, must have been able to hear the screams and the cries of the injured people, the injured soldiers down the bottom. And he said, well, he called his people for everything. He said, what can you make with people like that, the people like that? That's what happened even then. Now, we don't know who it was, who they were. They were never found. They might have been sailors, because there were ships. There was all sorts of ships in foreign sailors' houses. Could have been anybody. But somebody robbed his shop instead of going to help with the sight of rescue the wounded.
Any other incidents or stories from that time? You carried on the milk round until 41, that's into the bombing. Yeah. Anything else while you were doing that?
Well, we'd come across different places, you know, where one place was it? Ilford Avenue. Now, a French lady was the sister, but she was an English woman who'd married a Frenchman, and she came to live with her sister after France had fallen by then, and she came to live with her sister in Ilford Avenue, and we delivered milk there. I mean, this morning we go there, and Ilford Avenue had been absolutely flattened. In actual fact, there was a couple of George Medals one day, you know, with the rescuers. And I could see this lady's body sticking out from under all the rubble. You know, there was all sorts of people killed everywhere, you know. And that was that, but it became so matter of fact. You accepted that this was war.
Now, why did you stop doing the milk round? You got another job, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it was more money. So everything was so desperate for cash. It was desperate for cash, and I got a job on these barges.
What were you doing?
I was the mate on a steam barge called the Gertrude, and it was owned by the chairman of the watch committee for Birkenhead, later Mayor of Birkenhead, Mickey Halligan, and. I always remember that man, he'd shout down to me, Leslie, how much am I paying you? Fourpence halfpenny an hour, Mr. Halligan. Oh, I'm not dealing in halfpennies. He said, it's fourpence an hour from now on. That's how tight he was.
Now, what were you actually doing? What was the barge doing? What were you doing as mate?
Well, I was doing all the same job as the man would do. I'd take the wheel on the barge, because we go up to Manchester to Earl, and there used to be big steelworks up there taking loads of steel up from ships which had been bombed and beached at Tranmere Beach in those days, you know, and they'd cut them down for scrap, and away we'd carve that up through the ship canal to Earlham.
Was that mostly what you did, the ship canal route?
Not always, because we'd be coaling anything at all. It was like a little tramp barge, any work he could get. One of his barges, the Renbury, was just full of rubbish. That used to collect all the rubbish off the ships, because the ships were not allowed to dump rubbish at sea because it was dead giveaway. It was floating on the water, you see. So they had to store it all aft, on the after poop usually, at the after end. And then when she came in, we'd go along with one of the barges, and it'd all be offloaded into us.
Now, what was... how many crew were there on board the barge? I can't really picture it yet.
Three. There was the skipper, the engineer, use the word lightly, and the mate, who was me. I'd be 15 at the time. And, of course, I'd drive the winch. You know, it was a little steam barge, it was self-propelled. And, of course, we had a derrick and a grab, and we'd drive the winch with the grab on. And we might go to Bramley Moor Dock in Liverpool and load up with coal, and then take that coal across the river into the Birkenhead system and coal Blue Star ships and things like that. Ships like that, you know, because most of them were coal burners in those days.
Now, were you enjoying the work?
Oh, are you? Well, we were that used to work, and say it was a ship, it boated to us, you know, because that was all the means to an end, because we were going to join the Navy.
You did that 41, you started, or when did you start?
Pardon?
You started in 1941?
I think it was 1941 then, yeah.
And how long did you do that for?
I did that until, I think this is about the beginning of 1942. We'd gone up to the Manchester Ship Canal, and I'd been out that morning. The first job I had, because it used to be moored down in the docks where we lived, near to where I lived. And because the skipper and the mate came from further afield, one came from Liverpool, one from somewhere in Birkenhead. And because they'd say to me, "You get down there first thing in the morning and pump the engine room out, because it leaked like a sieve." And the water would be up. It'd be up around 2 feet around the engine. And so we'd have to go and start pumping.
Manual pump?
Manual pump, yeah. And we'd be pumping away to get the water out, and then they'd come, and then we'd start the day's work.
So you were telling me why you left. What made you...
So this morning, I'd been there from about 6 in the morning, and we finished up in Earlham in the evening, pitch black, it was blackout. And these two were going home, and I had no money to go home with. So somebody had to stay and look after the barge. So I was left a lad, 15. And I stayed the night on the barge. And of course, when they got home the following night, because we went to work again, back and back down, and my dad was home. I think my dad had been discharged, medically unfit by that time. And when I got back home, he said, "Where have you been?" And I told him. He says, "Right." And it was getting near midnight by the time we got home. So he says, "When you got to go again?" I says, 6 o'clock in the morning, we've got to get the train." So, you know, I've got to get the train, was it, to go to the north end of Liverpool or wherever we'd parked the barge. He said, "You're not." And that was it. He said, "Finish." And that was the finish of that. So he got hold of Mickey Halligan, and I don't know what went on, but he gave him up for it anyway. That was the end of that.
And what did you feel? Were you pleased, or had you had enough?
Well, I'd had enough of that anyway, so I went to work then in the mills.
In the mills?
Yep.
What, which mills?
Buchanan's Mills. It was an animal feed mill plus flour mill.
How did that work? What exactly were you doing?
Well, started off, the first job you started with, there was a very menial task of sweeping up, because there was animal feed cubes everywhere, and flour would be spilling everywhere if it were on the flour floors, you know, one thing or another. And so that was the job. I was in the sweeping gang. And we did that for a couple of months, and they sized you up, and then when a vacancy occurred in the trucking gang, you got the job.
Now, what was the trucking gang?
Well, that was where we trucked everything. There was about five floors in this mill, the warehouse, and all the animal food and flour and everything else was stored on different floors, you see. And when an order came in, lorries had come in, an order had come in for so many bags, and those trucking lads, because these were great big long floors, and they were beautifully polished floors, because it was all, what did they call it? Something called. And it's just like a dance floor. It's that polished with all the flour and the stuff that was on them. And because we used to load the trucks up, suck them to the chute, because you might have to walk the length of the...
What type of trucks were they?
Just sack trucks. And they put two, three, four, five bags on, didn't matter, depended what you could take. But you had to balance it. And we'd be backwards and forwards, and you would go like the clappers all day and every day. And you tip these into the chute. Then you went to the next floor or to the next job, whatever it was. That's what while we were trucking lads, and we stayed there until I joined the Navy at 17.
So that was 42 to 43?
That was 42 to 43.
And what did you think of that job? That sounds even tougher than the barge, to be
honest.
It
was, but it was the money. Because I always remember it was £2.47 a week.
Well, that's quite good then.
Well, it was. It was good. £2.47, but everybody's wages were going up. You know, around about that time, 43. And of course, a lot of women worked there as well. We had women in the gangs as well.
What, but working on the lane? Well,
they were trucking as well, yeah.
How did it fit in? Was there any problem?
Well, no, but they used to take advantage, didn't they?
They didn't work as hard.
Oh, no, well, he couldn't load them up like they loaded us lads up, you know. Oh, we used to have some fun there, no doubt about it, you know.
Now, how did you come to join the Navy? I mean, did you volunteer or did you wait to be called up?
No, I volunteered.
Now, why were you so keen, so set on joining the Navy? Just tell us, I mean, we hadn't really talked about this yet, but I mean, all the way through you've kept mentioning you're all, you know, wanted to join the Navy. That, well, what were you so keen about? Why? I mean, your dad had been in the Army, I thought you said. You
yeah.
Know, I mean, you know, why the Navy for you?
Well, it was because, I suppose, the proximity of the docks. And we were always going down the docks, going aboard the ships, because everything was open in them days, you know. We'd just go aboard the ship and have a look around. And we tried to get a couple of jobs, but he was the chaser, too young, we wanted to go to sea. Now, there was a pal of ours, Derek Oakley, and he was 12 months older. And there was another lad called George Hobson. He was older, and they each got a job. George Hobson went on an old tramp called the Penhale, and Derek got a job as a galley boy on a ship called the Horder, H-O-R-D-A, and that was a Norwegian ship. And when he come back and told us, me and his brother, Billy, flew down there. Hey, Mr. Mate, any more jobs going? No, I only wanted one boy, you know. So we didn't get a job, and we were very disappointed. Anyway, I very much doubt that our parents would have let us go. But Derek was 16 then. We were only, I suppose, 14, 15. And the hoarder, she loaded up, and she was loading up with the supplies that we assumed for the Middle East. Aircraft cases, you know, they used to case the aircraft in these big cases, mountain another. She left the Mersey and was never heard of again.
So your friend was killed?
Yeah. They don't know they don't know what happened. That ship was never, ever heard of again.
But it didn't put you off?
No, it didn't put us off, no, no. No, nothing put us off.
Now, where did you go about joining? Where was the recruitment?
So eventually I said to a pal of mine, Bill McAvoy, who you might go and see eventually, because he was on the Captain Class frigates. I said to him, I'm going over to join the Navy this afternoon. I've had enough of this place. Are you coming? So he agreed to come with me, or the next day, whatever it was. Anyway, so we went over to Renshaw Hall in Liverpool, and we volunteered.
That was the setup. That was the recruiting office.
That was the recruiting office.
Was that just the Navy, or was that everything?
No, I think no. That was Navy only, if I remember right. I could be wrong, but there were Wrens and naval people had seen to us anyway. So it was only Navy.
And what happened? I mean, what happened when you got there? I mean, what was the procedure for joining you up? Because the Navy don't take everyone.
Oh no! Well, they asked, "How old are you?" 18. You see, I was only 17. And Billy Mack, 18. Well, he was 6 months older than me. And it was at that time they started taking them in at 17 and a half. And I wasn't. This would be about the March or April. And, of course, I wasn't 18. But I told them I was. So we went through all the paraphernalia.
What's the paraphernalia?
Right, so death certificate. I said, I haven't got it. Well, where is it? I said, we bombed out, everything went. All right, lad. He said, bring your unemployment book in. Because you used to have an unemployment book then, which your employer had to stamp. You know, with the stamp. So I had to ask our manager for my unemployment book, because we were joining the Navy, they wanted to see it. And I was horrified, there's the date of birth on it. And of course, the unemployment book, it wasn't paper, it was like that, something like a blotting paper thing that said, if you rubbed it, it all fared up. So I got a rubber in my ignorance, and I went to rub the date out. So, hell, I made a right mess of that. I said, never mind, I've got shut of all that. I'll get the iron. I got my mother's iron. And I ironed it. I thought, ah, what'll have to do. So I put my date of birth in, you see, so making out I was 18 or... I can't remember if it was 17 and a half or 18. Making it out, that was it. So anyway, next time we go over, we're going for medicals and this, that and the other. I said, did you bring your unemployment book? Yes, sir, yeah. You've altered that, he said. I said, I have not. He said, look at that. It was obvious. But that was cheeky. Do you know what I can do? I can have you put in jail, this, that and the other. And of course, I was cheeky then. I said, oh, that's what you get for wanting to do your best for your country, is it? So that, anyway, in the end, we had a bit of argy-bargy. He says, how old are you, son? So I told him my right age. When you're 17 and a half, which would have been the May. Right. Okay, then, he said. I was all fine. Went through that all right.
So you did allow you to join underage?
No.
Oh, but...
So...
Right, okay, sorry, here.
So the next thing was, we're all waiting for our... Me and Billy Mack are waiting for our papers. And Billy Mack come in, he said, got me papers. I said, I don't got mine. And I went up in the air, and I wrote to them demanding my papers to this place. Anyway, eventually, I got them 3 weeks. I think I was 2 or 3 weeks behind Billy Mack. And he'd gone to rally, because I had to keep going to work. And anyway, 2 or 3 weeks later, I got my call up, and away I went.
And when would that be? That would be May, would it?
That was May. It was the 19th, the 18th of May, midnight, we got the train from Lime Street.
Now, just before we go, what about, were there any tests? I mean, besides your age, Were there any intelligence or physical or medical tests
at
Renshaw Hall? Were they? Do you remember them?
Oh, you had an absolutely thorough medical. Every part of you was examined. Your eyes, even colour blindness. You went through all that.
So it wasn't a fake medical. I mean, if you know sometimes that if you're breathing, they'd let you through.
Oh,
you know,
no.
A1, but
no,
this was a proper medical.
It was a proper medical, yeah. Oh, no, you've got to give them credit for that. It was an absolutely thorough medical.
And intelligent, and tests, any other tests? Little intelligence tests?
I can't remember about intelligence tests because they more or less gathered anyway, but this colour blindness test, you had that, because I ran. Conducted that, and you open these pages and you saw colours, and you had to distinguish where the numbers were. One was saying they were all numbers or letters or something like that. But that was a very thorough test, that one. I suppose they assessed you on your intelligence when they were talking to you of different things. I can't honestly remember that, but I do know that these doctors examined you and they wanted your full medical history right from birth, kind of thing, you know.
So you went to HMS Raleigh Shore Station in May 1943. Now, just tell them where HMS Raleigh is.
HMS Raleigh was situated in Tor Point in East Cornwall.
And what do you remember of the trip there? Were you on your own? It's a long journey, how did you get there?
Well, I was on my own until I got to Lime Street, and then there was a crowd of lads all going to the same place, and we're all crowded into this cab, the carriage. And these were the old-fashioned carriages with the corridor running down the length, you know, and of course we'd just sit up and beg things then, please. And we got the... I'm not sure, it was 2 minutes to midnight or 2 minutes after midnight, train from Lime Street. And, of course, the bombing and everything was going on everywhere in those days, and the London train. We had to, if I remember right, I can't remember whether we went direct to Plymouth, but we got to Plymouth at 1 o'clock the next afternoon.
So 13-hour journey.
It was.
What was it like?
It was horrible, horrendous, you know.
Did it
feed? No, you got nothing, no. So then we got off. There's all sorts of people there to marshal us from the rally, you see, and they've piled us all on this lorry. Oh, fleet of lorries they had there.
That was at Plymouth Station?
That was at Plymouth North Road Station. And then from there, we went down to the chain ferry and went across to Tor Point, to the rally.
Now, how did they take you in? You know, when you arrive in a sense as a civilian, and then they got this procedure for taking you in as a new lad. And so.
Yeah.
What was your reception like when you got there?
Oh, well, it was very good. They were all very good. They explained this, that, and the other. And they took us for a feed first. I always remember that. I was horrified at the smallness of it. We'd had nothing to eat since tea time the day before. And anyway, they dished this out, and we were all sat down at these long trestle tables, and unfortunately we were parked at the end. The meals were dished out at the far end, and the fellows who were nearest, they got the biggest helpings, and as they were getting smaller and smaller... Anyway, that was that. Then the next day, we had all sorts of medicals and God knows what. More medicals, yeah. When we got there. And then that was it, the 19th. It was the 19th when we actually got there. Was it the 19th or was it the next day, the 20th? They took us and they explained, now look, I'm going to take you now and you're going to sign these articles. Once you've signed them, you're in the Navy. So you've got between now and then to make up your mind whether you want to stay in the Navy or do you want to get out. Not one of us wanted to get out, did we? So we all joined. And of course, in those days, we all smoked. There was no such thing as cancer fears, anything like that in them days. So we went in, so I'll sign, come out, and GP old Mouch just down there. Tubby Squires, his name was, Chief Petty Officer. I'm nice as pie. And then when we come out, and eventually the last man come out, and he came out for them. And there we all are, standing lounging there. What's going on here? Did you get mine? No, you didn't fell in and put them cigarettes up. You'll do as I tell you. Oh, then what a change.
Just like that.
Just like that, yeah. I'm sure you, it was all right. He was all right, like he was good training. But what a difference. Call us for everything. Get fell in there. You're Navy now. You're in the Andrew. Oh. So that was it. So then we marched back to our billets, you see, to our huts. The people in number 13.
Now, what about kitting out? When did that happen?
That happened the next day. Day.
All right. Tell me about your huts, then. What were the huts like? Can you describe what they were like?
Just long, bare. What would they call them?
Nissen?
I mean, no, not Nissen huts. No, long barrack room huts they were. Very bare, with a pot-bellied stove in for heating. And iron beds, two-tier bunks, these beds, all along now. Well, you can get an idea from a photograph of how many...
You won't be able to see it, remember, so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but to give you an idea how many people were there, probably about 30, I think. And that was it.
Anywhere to put your kit when you got it?
Oh, yeah, what did we have... had some sort of little locket, if I remember right, but I'm rather hazy on that.
Well, let's go to the kitting out. What kit did you got that the day after?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about how they kitted you out?
You went in, right, what size shoes you take, boots you take, right, tens, so they throw a pair of tens at you. They'd weigh you up the size, there you are, and they'd throw the hat, or what size hat. You know, throw your cap at you, you know. Then you throw the collar, white front, two of everything you got. Then you got your blouse and your trousers. And some of them fitted where they touched. And I always remember this little fella coming out. Look at it, give me, he said, and it's going out like that. He said, oh, you see the tailor the following day, he sort that out for you. They did in a fashion.
And what about yours? Did yours fit?
Mine was reasonable, yeah, because I was only slim in them days, you know, very small, wasn't very small in height, but I think my chest expanded was only about 37 inches, something like that, 39 perhaps.